let's go ahead and get started. Thank you all so much for being here. This is our first episode of Love, Sweat, and Tears, Ingredients for Transformative Campus Leadership. I know it's a mouthful, but Jerry and I are co-hosting. I've kind of been hosting this on my own. I have not been a campus leader, so I've just been doing the best that I can. And now that we've got Jerry on board, she's going to be co-hosting this with me, and I'm so excited. And to kind of get things kicked off, we felt like, you know, the topic of turnaround schools is just such a great place to start. And so that's kind of why we have the two of you here today. Before we get real into it, I'd like to just kind of quickly talk to both of you, kind of see where you've come from and where you are now. That way our audience kind of feels like they know you, know where you're coming from. So John, would you kind of real briefly share a little bit about what school was like for you as
sure.
a kid?
As a kid, I grew up in West Texas.
Where you are now and the kind of work that you're doing now.
With a mom, a single mom who was a waitress raising four boys by herself.
Wow.
And so we, back in the day, we would just say we were poor. You know, we were just poor. It's the way it was. Who wasn't, right? Now, I didn't live in poverty.
Yeah.
But we were poor. And so I was the first one at the school every morning because I wanted to eat, right?
Yeah.
That was me. And I walked home. I walked to school, all of those things. I was just the kid that sort of was a West Texas kid to me growing up. Got through college, my district was the first district who said, hey, we'll hire you. I didn't even know where Northeast was. Like, that's fine. I'll take it because I need a job. Then I got to Northeast. I was there for 30 years, three different schools as a principal, 17 years. And then I retired right before COVID. Yes.
Yeah, you were smart.
It's a good decision.
Lucked out. But that was growing up for me. We worked all the time. We worked in the oil field, and I don't know. That was me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. Thank you for sharing that. Emily, how about you?
Yeah. So I attended a small private school through elementary, small enough that they combined grades at one point. But I loved school. My mom was my music teacher there. It was in my church. So it was it was my community on the weekend and during the week. I absolutely loved it. I was your typical like teacher student. I was the class helper. I was the overachiever. I loved everything about it. So now I...
Is that kind of why you went into education? Were you like, oh, I want to be a part of this? Or was there something else?
I worked in marketing for a magazine for a few years. And I just, it was, as a young adult, it was probably one of the, in Austin, it was super duper fun. I mean, I had access to a lot of cool events and people, but I didn't like it. I wasn't happy. So I went back to school and started over as a teacher. So this is my 17th year. It's all been in special education. I started in a self-contained classroom, moved into resource inclusion and co-teach. So that's when I worked with John. And then with Jerry, I like to say volunteered me for a behavior position after a year in Alamo Heights. I was very nervous about that position, and I ended up really enjoying it. And and then now I'm a coordinator for our two campuses here.
Okay, great. Thanks so much for that. I know it might feel like a weird place to start, but I love hearing how educators, you know, experience in school themselves kind of shape their thoughts and feelings and experience like on the campus. All right, well, let's get into it. So today we're talking about turnaround schools. And I want to take a minute just to understand, when you hear the phrase turnaround school, like, what do you all think or feel?
Jerry?
Well, I'll tell you, think or feel about turnaround schools. The first thing that comes to my mind, Beth, is one that needs help.
I immediately go to, my mind goes to academics, but I know that's one piece of just a school who's performing low academically.
To me, turnaround schools, there's a positive and a negative connotation in my mind. The negative is kids are not getting what they need in a school that needs to be turned around, which really sort of evokes some, not anger, but that's pretty close to it. On the other side of my experience of being a principal, going into Walsum and all the great things that I experienced, there's a positive to it. So I go both ways on that term.
Do you, where does that anger, that like the injustice of those students' needs not being
tied
met,
to a
is
lot
that kind of what that is tied to?
When my, with my experience, not only did that school get the short end of the stick from the district, but from the city, just from law enforcement, from health services, from, I mean, a lot of things. They just got the short end of the stick up. And that just, I don't think that's cool.
So John, you're making me think of, sorry, Beth, what was one of the pivotal points within that, that helped starting to turn, you know, move the needle? What do you think was like one of the most important things as you were, you know, stepping into that role? I want to call it a hot spot, but not sure if that's a great way of
No, that's a good,
analyzing
that's a good
it.
Place. I think one of the things was getting into that campus and understanding how far behind it was in so many areas. Just getting that, wait a minute, I didn't know what I had walked into. It was a ha-ha moment. It was one of those, okay, I'm going to have to up my game. I'm going to have to work 7 days a week. All of these things went through my mind once I started to get an understanding of what I thought needed to be done.
And did
John
you
did some...
choose that role? I'm sorry, Emily. Did you choose
that
role of going there, or did someone help guide
you
there?
Yeah, I chose it because I was 13 years as a principal at my second school, and I was about to quit education because I was burnt out as a principal. I'd given it my all. It's like, okay, it's time for me to do something else. And then the superintendent created a principal on special assignment. And he wanted someone to go into lowest performing elementary, lowest performing middle school. So my buddy and I, who were both principals, we said, okay, let's try it. So we got interview. We had to go through the interview process and everything. And then we were selected to be at those two schools. And my school fed into his middle school. So we were 2 miles from each other.
Well, I can tell you, I was ready to leave that year. I was very, very pregnant and going to be on maternity leave. So I said, I'm going to give it another year. The campus culture was sad. Teachers all around were unhappy. They were overworked. They felt unsupported and unheard. We had done this, I wish I could remember the name of it, this intense campus survey online, shared all of the strengths and weaknesses of the campus. There was a huge report. And one of the things that pinged on it was just staff, that's what I'm looking for, just staff being unhappy at the campus level. And at the time it was completely passed over, even though it was one of the number one things, it was ignored. And that to me was an indicator that things weren't going to change, because we'd taken the steps to look into what could improve our campus. And then said, oh, that's actually not the problem. And that's pretty much how it felt to be there, is none of this is a problem. Anytime teachers stepped up to say, hey, we see this need here, or I've got a concern about this particular kiddo, I'm really worried. It just felt somewhat swept under a rug. It was, wow. I had worked in low socioeconomic schools before that, but it was, as John says, I think I didn't know I was angry, but I was angry at being in a place with so many resources that weren't tapped into and utilized for the good of our kids. And it was that was really dark. I'm sorry.
No, I think that's good for us to hear, for us to know. I want people to hear that, like, there is what that feels like, what that pressure is like, what that I don't want to say hopelessness, but that uphill battle that you're just pushing this boulder up and I can't get any movement or momentum.
Oh, yeah. Well, so, and I are kind of going backwards too. So I was going to put this in there, John. I remember that you set up at least 2 campus meetings over the summer, invited everybody in to come, and you had points to talk about and really for us to share. And then he met with each individual grade level and team to listen to our specific thoughts and concerns. And I remember during those meetings, sometimes your face was just, you'd kind of go blank and be speechless at some of the things we shared. But that felt hopeful. I mean, someone taking their time in the summer to get us all together to listen. Mm-hmm. It was clear that in a second meeting, I believe you had follow-up questions. So you had thought about what we'd shared, and really, I mean, that was huge.
So, John, it sounds like one of the first steps that you took and even being able to dive into it was going on a listening tour and just really hearing from the people that were there and in the trenches.
Yeah, I had no clue what I was walking into, like no clue. But what I had going for me is I had been a principal for 13 years. So I knew to listen, I knew to ask questions. And like one of the things Emily was talking about is the expression on my face. I learned to stop doing that because I learned to stop judging why it was in the situation it was in. It's like, okay, it is what it is. I need the information of why the decisions were made to make this decision, the thinking behind those decisions. But I needed to stop showing my emotion and my judgment on what the hell were they thinking? I needed to just say, okay, it is what it is. No problem. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's find a solution. Yeah. Let's go. Hey, I kept a journal the whole time. Well, I kept a journal until a certain time, and then like, okay, this is poison. I got to stop writing. But I was on June 20th. I was the announced principal at that school. On July 6th, the scores came out, and the school I was leaving was the number one school in the district, and the school I went to was the 43rd school in the district, which was the 43rd school.
So wow, I was going there from were the 43.
Highest performing, wow. Highest performing to lowest performing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What made you said that your years of experience is kind of what told you to listen first, but I'd like to hear a little bit more about that, about what that decision-making process was like over that first summer.
You know, I would ask, because by then I knew all the executive directors and all the staff and everything. I mean, in a central office, and part of the agreement of me going to that campus was I got a meeting with all of the executive directors of the district so that I could figure out what they had been doing at the school, because it obviously wasn't working, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm in a room with 20, 22 executive directors from library services to transportation to special ed to GT to nutrition. And every single one told me what they had been doing. Mm-hmm. And what I realized in that meeting is none of them knew what to do. They were depending on me to go in there and figure it out. And then they would support me, which they did. but nobody knew how to fix this school. And that's what I've learned from that meeting till today, is the institutional knowledge is gone or lacking. And if somebody knew how to fix these schools, they would have already fixed them. Mm-hmm. So there's so many districts who just don't have that knowledge, so that they need responsive learning in the courses we're making and the services that I go in and provide, because they just don't have it. But that meeting told me a ton about the situation I was about to go into.
Yeah.
That was probably, I could only imagine the conversation that you were having in your head about, wow. I mean, I know as a former campus principal, we would always look to our district office people to be the experts in that field to help fill in the gaps. And so that had to be a very just aha moment for you, John.
Sure.
Oh, it was huge. And then, like Emily said, we set up dinners with each team. Like I ate Mexican food at this restaurant 7 straight nights.
Oh my God.
I'm telling you, same food. But I wanted to just hear, and I've got in my notes, you know, what the first grade team said, and then what the instructional coaches said, and then what the paraprofessionals said. Mm-hmm. And I just wrote tons and tons of notes. And then, but then I was able to turn around in a faculty meeting and say, okay, this is what I've heard that you wanted change, or that you don't want to change, or you would like life to be better at this campus. Okay, here's what I think ought to happen. What do you think ought to happen? And then we would go from there. And I remember those faculty meetings, to me, fondly. Emily had to sit through them, but it's like, okay, so what are we going to do about it? We have this problem. Everybody says it's a problem. What are you going to do about it? Let's go. Let's roll. Emily, would you say that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, I will say it's faculty meetings can feel somewhat, some of us dread them at the end of the day, a long day, but those were years I didn't, because they felt so productive and meaningful.
What would you say was different about those meetings that felt productive?
Yeah, so one is that the topics of conversation that were being presented were areas of concern that came from us, right? Like as the staff from the campus level, I think even from parents at times. So one, it was this collaborative time to say, okay, we've all been saying this we need change, right? So being an active participant in those meetings was easy, because we all wanted to see it. We'd all been asking for it. I also think, John, you inspired leadership. You didn't come and tell us what we were doing. What we should do to fix it. You continued to guide us by asking us a series of questions. I think you probably, I don't know, maybe you didn't. I think you knew where you wanted us to land, but at times I also felt like you let us get there as a group and as a collaborative effort.
Wow, that's powerful.
Well, I to that, I think, and I see this a lot in principals of, or in staffs, of a lot of decisions have been made on what's best for the adults in the building. Mm-hmm. And what I was trying to get everybody to focus on were the kids. Okay, it's like, the kids are going to come first. If we can make a decision that benefits the adults too, rock on. But let's get the focus back on the kids, because it's obvious from the cleanliness of the building to the instruction to the crappy parking lot, the kids weren't considered in a lot of decisions. And that's what I was trying to get everybody to focus on. And then let's go into that sandbox and make decisions because let's focus on the right thing.
So you're making me think, John, when you walk into this campus where everything needs to be fixed, I mean, what was like the biggest, obviously listening to the staff and moving the needle, but what bubbled to the top as being like, this is the number one thing that we're all going to be, you know, the wildly important goal that we're going to focus on to be able to move it?
All right. We're going to clean this damn building up.
Really? So something so simple as just the aesthetics. That's what you focused on first.
It was. Wow. Yeah. It was disgusting.
I mean, Emily, you're shaking your head.
It was filthy. And like, remember, I'm coming from a school, and this is what I tell principals all the time. Think about the best school that you can think of, the highest performing, and then let's shoot for that. Mm-hmm. Or think of your master teachers like Emily. What would she want from you? What would her class look mm-hmm. like? What would behavior management look like there? Well, the thinking in this building was not there. It wasn't, let's be the best, or let's create more master teachers, or it just wasn't. And so it's, okay, clean building. Let's get this place cleaned up. Number two, okay, pride? Is there any pride in the building? Are these kids proud? What would make them want to come to school? I mean, are we happy as adults? Are we looking the part? Are we taking care of their needs? Like, are we getting them food? Are we loving them? Are we giving them compliments throughout the day? Come on, man. These are easy things.
So you started with Maslow's hierarchy. Like, these are exactly. the basic building blocks. We've got to start here before we can even think about the next thing.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of principals, like, they've been told get in that building and turn those scores around. But just making life better for kids and the adults gets the scores better, right?
Right. Well, and research supports that.
Yeah. So I had a unique perspective to, like, I feel like I have to tell this. This was a unique perspective on this, this turnaround too, because I was on maternity leave until November. So I met John over the summer, and I remember coming in with my baby strapped to me to visit. And when I walked in the building, I was shocked. I mean, like, it brings tears to my eyes. It was, like I said, it was clean. Like, I remember there being like Walsam rain mat, so that when it was raining and we didn't track in mud, which was a thing. Wow. And dirt, there were trash cans in the hallways. These just, it sounds so simple, but when he says the campus was dirty, I mean, I remember picking up milk cartons off of the floor, you know, because there wasn't anywhere for kids to go with it, right? Like, so one, I walk in and it's just like fresh. Everything looks fresh. It is physically, the building looks better. And then I remember walking in the hallways, and I, you know, of course I've got a baby strapped to me, but so don't, but the attitude from the teachers, I hadn't seen some of them smile like that before. And same with the kids. I mean, I had kids who were popping up and, hey, kids I didn't know necessarily, but you could feel the change. You could see it, but you could feel it from the interactions with the staff and the kids as well. Wow. I mean, so it was even more obvious with staff that I worked with closely and with the kids I worked with closely, but even just that, just the teacher I passed in the hallway, it was evident, the office staff. Our data clerk scared me a little bit, and and she just wow. was the happiest person.
So people talk about when you walk into a school, the feel that you get instantly sure. when you go in there. And it sounds like it was literally a light switch had changed, Emily, yes. from the time you went on leave and you came back into the building.
Yeah, absolutely. It absolutely was. I mean, I remember leaving and feeling like in awe. And of course, I've got, you know, a first time mom, and I hadn't been super excited about mm-hmm. coming back. And that day I left thinking like, I can't wait to come back.
Oh,
yeah.
I love that.
John, as you were kind of pushing for, okay, let's stop putting adults first and let's put the kids first. Was there some pushback from the adults on campus on that? Or were they all kind of thinking the same thing? Like, how was that received from the adults on campus?
The big wall calendar that I teach in my class, in my courses, a big wall calendar up mm-hmm. in the office. And I had put everything on it. The whole office, because that's the biggest wall I could find, right? So it was like, okay, hell, this is where we're going to do it. I turn around and three teachers are crying. And I'm going, what's going on? And they're like, no one has ever planned out this intently for these kids. And I'm going, okay, I got some good people here. If that's what they care about and that's what I do, we're going to rock. And we had a dinner of teachers who had been there for 10 years or more. I wanted a dinner with just them, because if they've stayed at that campus for 10 years, I want to know what they care about, right? And man, they gave me so much great information about what had worked at that campus and what the teachers liked and what the kids liked. And so we had some really good, really good mojo going with those meetings that we had together. And then we had leadership team meetings and faculty meetings and campus council meetings. And, you know, I think that's one of the things I learned as a principal, is to meet with people often to hear, and then to problem solve and to teach them how to lead too. Cause I don't want to be the only leader on the campus. That's too big of a burden.
So once you built that trust, and it sounds like you had that ball rolling in a very positive way, it was easier to start, you know, pulling away, talking about data and moving into another direction because that trust was built.
Yeah, that took a lot. But yeah, trust is, you do what you say you're going to do, right? People can trust. Like John said, he was going to have this meeting. He had this meeting, or he said he's going to be in the foyer every morning. He's in the foyer every morning. Okay, so he does what he says he's going to do. So then after you have trust, then you can start arguing with each other. But you can't have that good argument and conversation and disagreement unless you trust each other.
So we've talked how some of the first steps that you took to kind of shift campus culture. Were there any other really important pieces or tools or strategies you used to kind of reset and then build on that foundation?
Structure-wise, here it is. I walked that building from inch to inch, got a list going for my custodians and for the district to start working and cleaning crap, right? And keeping animals out of the building and that kind of stuff. So that plan was moving.
Oh, wow.
And then I set up the master calendar so that everybody knew what was going to happen. Because to me, when people know, then that decreases their stress and we can work on a less stressed out mentality, right? Then I set up my meetings. Yeah. Then I
controlled the controls. So that
everybody knew when we were going to talk, when we were going to meet, what we were going to talk about. So you don't have to put me on blast on Facebook or talk about me in the parking lot. I'm going to be in your meeting tomorrow. Put me on blast then. I'm cool with that. But at least we're face-to-face and we're having that conversation. Then we started working on the kids they had award ceremonies like once every 9 weeks or something. I don't know. It was like, wait, these are great kids. Let's celebrate them more often. Let's celebrate them on the announcements, right? Bilingual, because this is a bilingual campus. It's like, okay, English, Spanish, let's go after it. Okay, then we had award ceremonies once a month, and let's invite parents in, which wasn't happening either. I mean, it was a lot. So to say I did this first and then this and then this, like, I truly, in my diary or journal, I worked 7 days a week from July 10th until November 1st.
Wow.
Every day. And then my buddy, who was at the middle school, he was working 7 days a week too. So at least we could commiserate with each other and drink it all out on Friday.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Emily, as you kind of came back in November, What were some of, you know, you talked about the cleanliness of the building and the change in people. What were some other more specific kind of things that you started to notice as you did kind of settle into being
that's
back?
A good question. I really noticed that our teachers felt more refreshed. And when you're feeling refreshed, even in November, which is like you've just gotten through Darktober, right? They were setting the bar higher for our kids. Yeah. They were, I think that they were working harder to create lesson plans that were differentiated for all students. And I think they were doing it before. Don't get me wrong. I just saw this overall ability to put more time and energy into things like planning for your students, because time and energy wasn't wasted in other areas. They're not necessarily wasted, but we had somebody here taking care of more of the basic things. So they weren't spending their time on that. So I also, the one thing we haven't touched on is I definitely saw, and I think this attributed to it as well, we had parents on campus. We never had parents on campus before that. Wow. Family and community involvement had grown. And so they were helping making copies and laminating and cutting out. So our teachers had just yet another support system. And then I also, the one, we all engaged more with our district learning. And I think that we were talking more and planning more together and building upon our strengths because we had that time to do it. And again, like because we all weren't managing just day-to-day things that I think with systems in place fell away from us as teachers.
Well, I think y'all were in crisis mode all the time.
Yeah.
And so we got out of crisis mode all the time because, man, that's exhausting. Can't do that. Hey, let me tell you a story about Donuts for Dads, all right? So every school has Donuts for Dads, right? But probably not the turnaround school. I had just come from a school where that was expected. Hundreds showed up on that day. Hundreds. Well, I present it to the leadership team at this school, and they're like, number one, I don't think they'll come. And number two, this is a rough neighborhood. I don't know. Do we want these? Do we need to have police presence? That kind of thing.
Oh, like, geez.
We're going to have Donuts for Dads. We're going to do it. They all came. I mean, we had like 97, because I have it in my journal. I got it right here. 97 dads show up for Donuts for Dads. It was crazy. It was awesome. Well, it was awesome. It's one of those, okay, this is cool. Let's do it. And then we did some other cool stuff.
So, John, you have to, I mean, I don't know if you realize, but you really modeled and set the tone. You set the tone for putting structures in place as the leader of the campus. You set the tone for hard work. You set the tone by visually mapping out, you know, where you had that big calendar back there where people really knew that you were putting in the time to make things better. And so it just makes me think that you doing that, I mean, Emily, who didn't want to follow in his steps because they saw he was walking the walk, right?
Yeah. When you set that bar high, people are either going to step up or we're not. But I mean, in this case, I don't remember anybody not stepping up, right?
I'm sure the ones that weren't on the bus were like, I'm out of here. But it was like, you were that beacon of hope that came into play when it sounds like, I mean, the turnaround school could have been a turnover school, right? And staff, because Emily, you being a master teacher within your realm, already saying that you were feeling like you were ready to leave. I'm sure there were many more that were feeling, having that conversation in their head.
Yeah. And they were good teachers. I mean, there were really good teachers at that campus. Oh,
really good. And I know they're really good teachers because as a principal, if I ever talked or interviewed teachers from a campus that was similar to the one that you were at, I knew that they could make it anywhere. And just being able to, you know, to teach all kids.
You know, the other huge thing, go ahead. Yeah, no, I was gonna say the other huge thing we discovered this.
Go ahead, huge, please. No.
Resources, like this huge wealth of resources that we didn't know about at Walsum that everyone else did know about, right? Like the specific trainings and people and who came in and co-taught with us if we needed help planning or just implementing a certain a lesson. I mean, you opened doors to things we didn't know existed in our very own district, which again, just made us better teachers.
Yeah, wow. And that's where when I work with principals who are brand new, it's like, okay, how do we get you up to speed to know all of the resource, all the possibilities, how to build business relationships, how to work with your PTA, how do we get that moving as soon as possible, as quickly as possible? And then, you know, I know we haven't really talked about the courses, but that's why I created those courses. It's like if somebody was hungry and really wanted, like, give it to me right now. Those are my top 10 systems in those courses. And that's what I try to get principals up to speed. Cause being a principal, it's a whole different world. I thought when I was an AP, I thought, the principal's just my job a little bit harder. It's not, it is not. And as I became more and more experienced as a principal, I realized I need to start teaching my assistant principals my job, because if the bus hits me, they need to know what the next steps are. And so that's why we started systemizing everything we possibly could, so that the next wave of leaders, they know that communication is a system. This is what it looks like. Data management, this is a system. That's what it looks like.
So you're making me think, John, it gives us a great segue into, I don't think we're done. I don't think we're done having a conversation about the next step. What are you thinking, Beth?
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, our idea for this was we'd have a couple of different episodes, a part one and a part two. And we weren't sure whether to separate them out by topics, but I would love to, we kind of shared the story of what it felt like and what it looked like. I would love to dive into some of the particulars, some of the strategies and systems of what happened with that transformation, other transformations that you've seen, John. And then Emily, I'd love to hear your perspective of, as John rolled out these different strategies and systems, how the teachers on your campus responded to that, how students responded to that. I'd like to kind of dive in there. If we have a great idea or something else that you'd like to talk about, let's do it. But I'd love to kind of, you know, one thing I really want to hear from John and then also from Emily is, you know, you kind of, I'd like to define, like, what is the role of leadership specifically in a turnaround school? Let's start like at day one. What should that leader be doing? And then as they kind of settle in, like, what is leadership
my first or
in a turnaround school?
I had the summer to understand the gravity of my role, realizing this is not the same principal I was at my second school at this school. I got to be something else. And this is before I really met everybody. I had, you know, maybe had dinner. It was like, okay, I got to go in and own this place like no one else. I have to be the one calling the shots just to get the ball rolling, because I just felt like it was going to take a lot of momentum to get things rolling. And then building that leadership team and figuring out who I could trust and who I couldn't trust with their decision making, right? Because I didn't get to hire my leadership team. There may be one or two people, but they're in place. Like, okay, I got to take what I have and we got to go. And so I think building that leadership team and telling everybody, being able to tell the staff, you don't have to come to me. Anybody on the leadership team, you go to them. If they say yes, then it's a yes. I will deal with that at the leadership team meeting. But if they say no, don't go to a second one. It's a no, because we've talked as a leadership team. So it's trying to get that out there that let's roll. We got to run. We got things to do here, right? Emily, do you think that?